This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the Battery Doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
Hi, I'm Steph, and I work at United Healthcare. When I think about United Healthcare's members, I think of my own family. My niece was diagnosed with an ultra-rare genetic disorder. I know how hard it is for our families. At United Healthcare, we can make it easier.
I'm Brian. I care because I know what it's like to not speak the language. It's not easy. Health insurance is complicated. I would say our job is to make everything easy for our UHC members. I work for United Healthcare. I'm committed to care.
Did you know that you can buy your car completely online on AutoTrader? Really? Just visit AutoTrader.com, filter and search through dealer listings for the car you want, make, model, color, and all the features that matter to you. Go ahead, get picky. Whether you're into subcompacts with heated cup holders, crossovers with all-wheel drive, pickups with kicking sound systems, or SUVs that can survive whatever chaos your kids unleash, just drop in your info and you'll only see cars in your budget. Really, once you find your one and only, you can do the whole deal online and have the car delivered to your driveway. Or you can pick it up at the dealership and drive your new ride right off the lot. Really. Auto Trader makes it easy to buy your car online because the whole process is designed around your wants and must-haves. Auto Trader. Buy your car online. Really.
Hi, this is Jordan Moreno, and this is The Valley Now, your weekly feel-good hour where we lift each other up with the stories of good people doing good things in your neighborhood. Every week, we'll be talking with community leaders who have a unique passion for our thriving city and those that make The Valley such a special place to live. Get ready to be inspired by the work they're doing, whether it's mentoring our youth, providing a platform for those without one, or just driving those worthy charitable causes. Listen in on the conversations and join us in raising our community. This is our time to shine, and this is The Valley Now. Mesa United Way is an organization that's been around for decades, dating back 100 years, but Azura is one that you might not have heard of. Exciting things are happening in Mesa, and here to tell us more about the rich history and the expansion into a second nonprofit is the CEO, Mark Young. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So 100 years ago, Mesa looked much different. Arizona looked much different. Tell us how the organization started and then how it evolved over time.
Sure. So in 1924, you know, in the midst of the Depression, local community leaders in Mesa, including the Mesa Rotary, came together to start a community chest. And primarily the role at that point was to make sure that immigrant children that had come to work had clothing and food and to take care of people that way. It changed names a couple of times throughout, World War II. But the idea was always the same, you know, to make sure that people in need were having their needs met. In 1964, that group joined with United Way. And so we've been in United Way specifically for 60 years this year.
Wow.
And it's the same, right? The mission has always been the same. It's to assure that that people who are struggling with whatever it may be have an opportunity to move out of that into a place of success as they define it.
Mm-hmm. And why did you create the second nonprofit? Because that was just recently. A lot's happened since the 60s till now.
That's right. So we did that in July. There's a, things change. And and get people's giving patterns change. So United Way, which is still effective, still doing good work, was really based on workplace campaigns. And the idea was that United Way would know all of the nonprofits in a community that were doing work to help people. And most folks didn't. I mean, the regular populace knew of Red Cross and Goodwill and Salvation Army, but they didn't know the breadth of work. And so they really, you know, relied on United Way to know who those folks were, to check out their financials, and then to allocate money to them to continue their work. The internet changed all of that, right? So now people can, you know, if what you're concerned about is old dogs, you type in old dogs, it gives you the nonprofits, you give your money directly to them. And so that need for United Way to be the allocator just became less and less necessary. And companies have switched to creating their own employee groups that make the decision on how their philanthropic dollars are going to be spent. So for us, that meant we wanted to start specific programming that filled gaps of service. So we do quite a bit of work in foster care, in literacy, veterans, taxes, those kinds of issues. So 10 years ago, we started several initiatives. And the idea was to meet the needs of Mesa folks. What happened was people were coming from Apache Junction and Phoenix and East Valley. And in our literacy program, we did, you know, help kids from Tucson and Flagstaff. So it didn't really make sense for us to just be Mesa-centric and Mesa United Way. So we've taken those initiatives and we've put them under Azura. So Azura is the umbrella of those things that we do that are valley-wide or statewide. Mesa United Way continues to work in Mesa specific.
And good for you for adjusting to that change, because I've been a nonprofit for a while, and I remember starting to see that shift. And I remember starting to see the United Way shift of, you know, it became somewhat of a pass through. So, you know, a pat on the back to you and the team and for everybody for adjusting with those changes. And that's just me being a fundraising geek. But I remember when that shift started happening.
Yeah. And it, you have to keep up with it. I mean, and part of the struggle with something as large as United Way or as institutionalized as United Way is the quickness of them being able to shift gears, right? But at a local level, you know, we're pretty flexible, so we're able to do that more quickly. So I know there's a lot of work going on with United Way to determine, you know, what's the best path forward, how best as a network we can meet the needs of folks. And they'll come up with something. That's a lot of really smart people. So they'll figure something out. And when they do, they'll be right there to help out.
Absolutely. And I want to provide kind of an overview of some of those programs that you touched on. Foster 360 and then Helen's Hope Chest are kind of the foster-related ones. Let's start there and talk about those programs.
You bet. So Helen's is Hope Chest is celebrating 10 years this year. Started in the basement of a church in 2009. During the recession, the state cut benefits to foster families in half.
Yikes.
And we were concerned that that would make it more difficult to get clothing and Christmas and birthday gifts and all of those necessities. You know, when a kid gets taken out of their home, they, if they're lucky, they have an opportunity to throw some stuff in a garbage bag and take it with them. But a lot of those kids show up at their new foster homes with really just the clothes on their back. So we opened up Helen's. It now is in a really beautiful building that the city of Mesa built for us. It's a boutique. So kids can come in with their families four times a year. They can choose five complete outfits. And then we also do Christmas and books and hygiene and diapers and just whatever the families need. So it's been really great. The idea of giving out clothes and stuff, that's not a new idea. I would say that our secret sauce is that we do it with great dignity. We want kids to feel like they are a part and that they are cared for and that it's not just, hey, you walk in a garage and here's a box of stuff and good luck to you. So we feel really good about that. Through that work, and in my past, so I used to be a youth pastor. I was a pastor for 30 years. So I used to be a youth pastor and dealt with a lot of teenagers that really struggled coming out of the foster care system. So two things were happening at once. I was working with trying to figure out some kind of new solution for the homelessness issue, and visited 11 tiny homes across the country and got to know folks, and felt like we're not winning this battle. You know what I mean?
It's right.
We have our numbers continue to go up despite the amount of money that we spend to fix that issue. And I thought, we've got to find a way to prevent this. How do we prevent this from happening? And through Helens, we knew that kids that were aging out of the foster care system were really struggled. We didn't know how bad they struggled. So we started doing some research and discovered that out of 900 kids that, you know, age out of foster care every year, about 450 of them will be on the streets within 2 years.
So that's just heartbreaking. That's
heartbreaking.
That is half of the population.
It is. And if you don't stop it soon, right, the deal with homelessness is stopping it early, because once you become accustomed to the streets and you create a new family on the streets, people who have your back, it's very difficult to get people to want to get off the street. So we started Foster 360. Initially, it was a navigation program just to meet with those kids and help them make sure they were getting their benefits, but we couldn't keep track of them because they were couch surfing and it was just really tough. So we opened a facility in downtown Phoenix that was 10 rooms. We decided to explore a tactic that was new. So we asked the students to come in to not work and to not go to school for 3 months. We take them to Barrow Neurological Institute, where we have discovered that every student we've had has had traumatic brain injury. And so we do 3 months of, I hate to say trauma-informed care because it's such a buzzword, but we
It has become buzz.
Yeah, right. But we practice that. So it's 3 months of getting kids' meds adjusted to, you know, a lot of them have been medicated for things they don't have. And and then after those 3 months, getting to school, getting a job, and honestly, the kids can stay until they're ready to be successful on their own. So at one point he was like, well, I think we can do this for about 18 months. We've got students who have been with us 3 years because there's no place to go. Right.
I mean,
unless you're making 70 grand a year, where are you going? So
it is wild just to even think that that's the baseline.
Yeah, it really is true. So we opened a second location in Tempe this summer that we're calling Tier Two. So the students who've been with us, who are now, you know, on a good path, that's more independent living for them. And we are going to open a place in Mesa for another 8 in the next 6 months.
Oh, so very cool.
That's gone really well. And the way that we've done it is beginning to have an impact on how other places are thinking about doing it, you know, because a lot of the contracts really are the kid has to be working or in school. Well, that's failure 101 if they can't get those other things figured out.
Right.
Yeah.
And the one-on-one attention that I'm sure they maybe have never had. They're 18, 19 years old and have never had someone sit with them and say, okay, what medications are you taking? What does a day in the life look like for you? And that personal attention is something that can make such a difference.
Yeah, so many of those students that we have, I think, I don't want to say 100%, but most of them, they were removed from their home when they were teenagers, right? 12, 13. They've seen a lot, and really hard to get them into a foster family home. Foster families want kids. Teenagers scare them. So they end up in group homes, and then that's a crapshoot. You know, there's some really good ones and there's some really not good ones. And I think every kid that we've had has come out of the group home where you're right. They don't get that individual attention. They don't get, you know, the staff, the adults in their life change constantly. And that's the chaos that their life has been. So where are there people that are committed to being the third adult, you know, the person that can really help them out. And it's some of those stories really are me. We had a boy who came, who was on all kinds of meds, had been diagnosed with a bunch of mental disabilities, got him through Barrow, got him off the meds. When he first came, he couldn't talk. When he would try to speak, his lips would turn blue and he'd get really shaky. After 3 months, meds were gone. Kid was speaking fine, incredibly intelligent. Just no one knew because he couldn't talk.
Right.
And, so now he's completed an apprenticeship as an electrician, and he's doing really well. So, you know, it's those kinds of things that we see over and over.
Yeah, and those are great success stories, though that is truly changing the trajectory because you're still able to get them at a young enough age that they're still a little bit malleable, maybe stubborn, but still a little bit malleable to be able to kind of turn those patterns around.
Sure, and sometimes they're stubborn for a good reason because they've had a lot of people telling them what they should be doing, and it's not what they want to do. And we work really hard. It's important for us to say, success as you measure it, not success as I measure it, right?
That's great. I like that.
Not my way of what your life should be, your way of what your life should be, and how can we help you get there?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a new way of thinking, too. When we talk about the trauma-informed approach, that is kind of a new way of approaching things that some of the old school folks have a harder time wrapping their heads around, but it really works.
Yeah, you know, the oddity of thinking that everybody wants to be married and have a 3,000 square foot house, five kids, and, you know, that's just not the way it is. And, you know, when you have people who are, I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but when you have people who are upper middle class that haven't dealt with those issues, that are sitting around a table, all of them really good hearted, they want things to be different, but they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know. They haven't walked in those shoes. You've got to listen to what those folks want. I had had some of our volunteers do a survey of homeless folks at Paz de Cristo, right? And it was a really simple thing. Tell us five things you need. Now, one would think that number one would be a place to live. It didn't even show up in the top five. The number one thing folks wanted were lockers. I couldn't have come up with that. If I sat in a room for 10 years, I couldn't come up with that. So, you know, we need to make sure that we're asking the people that we're helping how best we can help.
What was the rest of the top five? Now I'm curious.
Outdoor restrooms. So okay. The restrooms that were accessible.
Mm-hmm.
More safe places to sleep that weren't shelters. Socks and shoes. I don't know if I can remember the fifth one. The shoes. In the homeless population, that's a big deal because they get stolen from each other a lot.
Oh, goodness.
Insane, you know? So, so it was those types of things. We misunderstand, I think, the connections that get made on the street, right? The people who become the people who have your back, the people who watch your stuff, the people who really do become your family. And you can't just pluck people out of that and put them in some lonely apartment somewhere and expect them to succeed. It just doesn't work that way. So it's difficult. And there's a lot of good people working on that. For us, we're trying to figure out how to work on it from the front end.
And that's a great place to be. Tell me about the Veterans Coalition.
Mesa, what we wanted to do there was the same as what we wanted to do with Foster 360. Our vets have a lot of benefits. But getting them is tough. I mean, especially if you're dealing, you know, with poverty and you don't have a good working vehicle because you have to travel all over town to get different stuff. So initially what we had started was navigation services. So a vet would come in. Our commitment was we'll work with you until you get to the place. You know, we're not going to hand you a resource guide and we're not going to say good luck.
Right, that you throw in the trash.
Yeah, that's or that have 85% of the numbers either don't get answered or they don't function, right?
I mean, or a 1-800 something.
That's right. It's just a way of passing off responsibility in a lot of cases. So so that was a commitment. It's changed some over time. COVID really affected us in that space. But back on the upswing, so we have benefits counselors there from Wounded Warriors that will help people work through their benefits. all of our staff is trauma informed, and so we are doing trauma informed care, support groups, art therapy. We work with Arizona at Work to help people transition into work. You know, my son-in-law came out of the Air Force, and in the Air Force, he was a lieutenant and was very successful. But his job was radar jamming. So how does that translate into, you know,
right. The
public sector? And we find that a lot with these guys. You know, they've had a lot of responsibilities in the past. They've seen a lot of things. They come into the workforce, and it's really hard to translate what they did in the military into civilian work. So we help with that as well.
How did your son-in-law translate?
He did well. He took a job building, working for a bicycle company and building bicycles, and he's moved up through management and he's doing really well. But it took a while.
Yeah. Right, right. And lastly, the Azura Literacy Program. That's kind of the last umbrella program, right?
Yeah, we do a thing called VITA, which a lot of people do. That's pretty important. So, you know,
and very timely.
It is. So we do that. And yes, we have 16 locations. If people want to get their taxes done and they make less than $62,000, they should come.
Make the plug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We do about 6,000 tax returns a year. We're one of the only ones, not only in the state, but in the nation. The guy who runs that program has saved all of the software for the 12 years he's been there. So if you haven't paid your taxes for 10 years, you can come to us and we can work that out for you. Right.
Okay.
So we do about 6,000 a year, about $6 million in return. So that's important. The literacy thing started as an attempt to stem summer reading loss, right? So kids over the summer. So we did book distributions and we would distribute 20,000 books to kids. That wasn't very effective. If there's not folks at home that can read the books to you, that doesn't make much sense. So we changed when we do the distribution so that they're earlier in the school year. And then during COVID, we couldn't do distributions anymore, right? We had to put a hold on that. While we knew kids were diving in even lower with their literacy rates.
Yes.
And so we started an online reading buddy program. So volunteers meet with the background check volunteers meet with a student twice a week for 30 minutes for 6 weeks. And all they do is read to them. There's no tutoring. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be an educator. You just have to be able to read. So the kid comes in, picks the book out of this vast library we have, and they read. We pre-test those students, and we post-test those students. And the improvement over 6 weeks of just having someone read to you is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think of that. It's like, oh, isn't that cute and fun? No, this is probably our biggest anti-poverty work.
It's real.
It's real. If a kid can't read by third grade, the chances of them graduating from high school, the chances of them being incarcerated, the chances of them having a job are slim to none. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a recipe for homelessness and addiction. So we see that as a really critical piece. And we're going to work on that. I mean, we have school, you know, the schools want to aim for 85% of literacy by the end of third grade. There are schools out there that are running 15-20%. So if we don't get something's got to change.
Yeah.
Or that pipeline into poverty is just, it's going to be a 10-lane highway.
And for those who maybe are more susceptible to poverty, just opening up doors to other possibilities and just learning about the world without having to go anywhere. It's as a side anecdote, this is more prevalent for me because I have a son who's in pre-K. So they go to the library once a week. He brings a new book home and he's jazzed about it. And he's like, what topic should I, like, he doesn't use the word topic, but like, what book should I bring home this week? And so my husband and I try to make a conscious effort of, okay, how about one about sports? Okay, how about one about lizards? All right, can you find one that helps with counting? And so just this world, so many worlds outside of what is within someone's house can be learned about without having to go anywhere. And I think that makes a difference too.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, So my degree, which doesn't make any sense with being the CEO of a nonprofit, I have a master's degree in poetry. So, you know, and nobody cares. but I do know the importance of that and the empathy that can be built through reading and the understanding of the world. Folks that live in poverty are surrounded by people who live in poverty. So what they know, what their culture is, comes from that group of people who are all suffering through the same things, right? So to help kids and those families see beyond that, the possibilities beyond that, is really a critical piece. And having other people that can show them another way, that those are important things. Reading is the first key. Mm-hmm. So we do see that as just an incredible responsibility and need.
So then a personal question for you, from poetry major to pastor, to why CEO of a nonprofit and why Mesa United Way?
Yeah, you know, that's a super interesting question. So I was a pastor first, then I went and got my master's in poetry when I was 50.
Okay.
I got hired at a new startup college in Mesa. So I quit my church job to be the director of student services and their literature guy, English guy. The school had a 5-year commitment to be in Mesa and they closed after a year. So I didn't have a job. We had placed a student at Mesa United Way as an intern. So she called and said, "Hey, we got a job over here in resource development. Would you be interested?" I went, "Sure." But here's the truth. I didn't even know what resource development was. I thought it was program development.
No.
Then I find out I'm raising money. I'm like, oh, I'd have said no to this. And
right. That's not a super fun place to be.
That's not what I wanted to do. But it went well. And 2 years later, they made me CEO. And so I've been there since.
How long has that been?
It'd be 10 years in June.
10 years. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, what's on the horizon? What's next for you and the team?
Continuing to get word out about Azura and building support for the, you know, all those programs that we're doing. And we've got three things we're kind of looking at. So the first one is a nonprofit incubator. That comes from some philosophy. We think there needs to be more nonprofits doing gap fill as opposed to just repeating what everybody else is doing. There's a lot to be done.
Yes.
And so that's on the horizon. We're going to be pretty careful about that because we want to find new stuff. You know, my philosophy is that we need to stop Costco models of nonprofits, where we centralize everything in one place so it's convenient for the people who work there. But for the people who need the services, it means travel. So I believe in a Starbucks model of nonprofits. We need a lot of them in every neighborhood so people can just go to their space, their place. It also stops things like, you know, what happened downtown Phoenix. I mean, we kind of created the situation where the homeless folks live because that's where all the services were, where if they were spread out, people could, you know, not do that. So. Yeah. That's what we're looking at. That's one thing. Second thing is we'd like to work with some single moms with kids in a poverty alleviation program. How do we get you from point A to point B? So we'd like to take a year to do that, have some financial incentives in that, maybe do a childcare co-op. We're still kind of working through what that might look like. And then we have concern about, you know, the fastest percentage growth of homelessness is people over the age of 60 who've never been homeless a day in their life. Mm-hmm. They're on a fixed income. They can't go back to work. Their rent's increased by 40% and they have nowhere to go. We've got to figure that problem out.
Scary.
It is scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a woman in our office, 95 years old, legally blind, in a wheelchair. Her husband had passed away. Her rent doubled. And they evicted her in 1 month. She had nowhere to go.
Oh, come live with me.
I know, no kidding.
I'll take all of the 95-year-olds in wheelchairs. Oh,
it was super sad. And I'd like to say that's one story. You know, that's the one time that happened. I mean, we ended up putting her in a hotel for almost 3 months before we could figure out a place for her to go. So that population's growing, and we need to head it off of the past before it gets too insane.
Well, you've got a lot of work ahead of you. You've got a lot on your plate, but not doing it alone. I really like what you said about not Costco, Starbucks.
We've got a great staff. I mean, they work really hard, and it's nonprofit, so they work really hard and don't get paid very much. Mm-hmm. They want to be change agents. It's not a job to them. It's, you know, in church world, we'd call it a calling. People are there to help people. And I consider myself extremely lucky to get to work with the people that I do.
And then how can everyone get involved? How can we, is there volunteerism opportunities? How can we help with these initiatives? Because they are huge.
They are huge. Yes, we always need volunteers. So during tax season, we have about 140 volunteers that do taxes. We can, and most of them return every year, but we can always use more folks, because the way all of this works is the more volunteers we have, the more work we can do.
Right.
So literacy, we need adults who are willing to take on 6 weeks and read to kids. Again, the more volunteers we have, the more kids we can accept. So that's good. Helen's Hope Chest is always looking for volunteers. The amount of clothing that we receive on a weekly basis is insane. So we pick every piece. We keep the best stuff. We wash it, dry it, press it, and hang it. We just need help sorting it, right? Then we give some other way to another place, and then we whatever we don't use, we recycle at a fiber recycler. All of those things we could use volunteers for. So people are welcome to contact me. They can go to the Azura website. They can go to the Macy United Way website, or they can just send me an email. And that's easy to remember. So it's mark.young@macyunitedway.org.
Thank you so much for your time, Mark. I feel like we could hang out all day.
You know what? I'd be happy to do that. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really enjoy this.
All right. I want to give a very special thank you to my guests today. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program and making our community an amazing place, not just to live and to work, but most importantly, to play. You can hear The Valley Now on the radio with audio on demand on radio station websites and the Odyssey app. My name is Jordan Moreno. Shine your light, share your love, and join us again next week right here on The Valley Now.
This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the battery doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
Hi, I'm Steph, and I work at United Healthcare. When I think about United Healthcare's members, I think of my own family. My niece was diagnosed with an ultra-rare genetic disorder. I know how hard it is for her families. At United Healthcare, we can make it easier.
I'm Brian. I care because I know what it's like to not speak the language. It's not easy. Health insurance is complicated. I would say our job is to make everything easy for our UHC members. I work for United Healthcare. I'm committed to care.
Did you know that you can buy your car completely online on AutoTrader? Really? Just visit AutoTrader.com, filter and search through dealer listings for the car you want, make, model, color, and all the features that matter to you. Go ahead, get picky. Whether you're into subcompacts with heated cup holders, crossovers with all-wheel drive, pickups with kicking sound systems, or SUVs that can survive whatever chaos your kids unleash, just drop in your info and you'll only see cars in your budget. Really, once you find your one and only, you can do the whole deal online and have the car delivered to your driveway. Or you can pick it up at the dealership. and drive your new ride right off the lot. Really. Auto Trader makes it easy to buy your car online because the whole process is designed around your wants and must-haves. Auto Trader. Buy your car online. Really.
Jake from State Farm. I just beat my running PR, so I'm celebrating with a Banana Bonanza smoothie.
Hey, and you can keep celebrating when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling your home and auto with the State Farm Personal Price Plan. Go bananas.
I will. Hey, make it a large.
Bundling. Just another way to save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
In Pittsburgh, we've always forged things. We just forge them differently now. Flavors bold enough to stop you mid-bite. Art bright enough to change the way you see the world. Neighborhoods alive with color, music, and motion. In Pittsburgh, everything we ever forged was made to spark something more. Come see what sparks you at visitpittsburgh.com.